It's the Monster Cave Halloween podcast on Spotify. Hey, all you freaks and geeks and monster fans and kids out there, it's the Monster Cave podcast. And I'm doing the special Halloween episode since Halloween is actually a week away, which is awesome. So I just want to introduce myself again. My name is John. I'm the host of the Monster Cave podcast. And we're going to have a lot of fun today. One thing I have to say, though, is normally I have Colin, my co-host, on the show. But he's moved on to greener pastures. He's actually working at a TV station now, so I just want to give it out to Colin. You know, congratulations, you are going to be missed. But I know things happen, and I'm just proud of him. You know, so happy for him. So and he's always I told him I said you're always welcome on the cave. You know, you're always welcome, and I just want to say congratulations, buddy. So with that moving on, it's just going to be me. So bear with me, and if you like Colin and don't like me, well, then get over it, because it's me now. You're going to sit with me, and, you know, probably the best time to listen to this podcast on Spotify is probably at night while you're laying in bed and it's dark in your room. Listen to my voice. So without further ado, let's move on to the first movie that's playing in my my cave tonight. It's the 1972 horror classic Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things, directed by Bob Clark. Now, if you know who Bob Clark is, he directed Porky's. And he also directed the holiday classic, A Christmas Story, which I'm sure everyone knows. It's, A Christmas Story is a classic. But this one, this is kind of where he first started off directing. And this movie is just, it's so creepy. The atmosphere is so awesome. But it has to deal with six friends that are in a theatrical troupe. They go to this island and dig up a corpse. In this abandoned cemetery that's on this island, they decide to do a satanic rite, but things don't go as planned. So it's Alan Ormsby plays Alan, who's the director of this theatrical troupe, and he's bringing his actors to this island. Now Alan is a, you know, from the get-go, you know he's a complete douchebag. This guy, he's, you know, he's checking out the chicks, you know, in front of the boyfriends, which he can get away with because apparently they don't want to get fired. So they, you know, they put up with his crap. And he's just a complete jerk through the whole movie. He insults them, you know, ridicules them, you know, basically threatens them with firing them if they don't do what they're told. So what happens is they get to the island, go into this abandoned house, and there's a history on this island with the cemetery and the house. The house, apparently there was murders in this house, suicides. And Alan tells as he calls them children, that's why it's called Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things, tells them what happened in this house. what they don't realize, though, is Alan brought some stuff with him. He brought this, it looks like a magician's cloak with him, and he brought this book that has these spells in them. And one of the spells is How to Raise the Dead. Dun, dun, dun. So they decide to go out to the graveyard, which has a history as well. The history of this graveyard is that the people that are buried here were all like either mass murderers or, you know, child molesters. Anyway, it's not a great, really great history. So they go out to the graveyard, and they have to dig up a corpse for this satanic rite. and they dig up Orville. So they place Orville on this cross that's at this grave, and Alan gets down into the grave, and he lights some candles, and he draws a pentagram on the casket that's in this grave. And he performs his rite, and apparently nothing, you know, happens. Nothing happens at all, and, of course, the children or the actors decide to, you know, make fun of him. But he's got, as he calls it, another trick up his sleeve. He decides to take Orville, who's the dead guy, back to the house. And no one's having that. But it all comes down to his, hey, do you want to lose your jobs? Well, they decide to go along with it. And Alan has them bring the corpse back. And they decide to make fun of the corpse by having this mock wedding and all that stuff, which is, I don't care if that's Tankwright worked or not. You just don't do that because you're really just asking for it. Well, guess what happens? I don't know if the rite actually worked or if it was just, you know, making fun of Orville, the corpse. The dead come back. And this scene where they come back rise from the grave, probably my favorite dead rising from the grave scene in any movie. I remember watching this when I was a kid. It was late at night. It was on some, it was like something, I'm always trying to figure out how to find the opening to this TV horror show that was on late at night. And I don't want to go into it too deep, but I was watching this late at night upstairs in my parents' house. I was probably maybe, I don't know, 10, 11 years old at the time. And the scene where they're coming out of the graves, the sound effects that's going on in this scene, I swear to God, that was probably what it would sound like in hell. Because you have shrieks, you have screams, the music is just really bizarre and creepy. I had to turn it off for a bit because I was freaking out from that scene. It's a pretty creepy, scary scene, if you ask me. And it still is. It still holds up to this day, I believe. I think it was a great scene. But after that, the dead rise. They start attacking the actors, and Alan included. And by the end of the movie, everyone's dead. I mean, when I first saw this, I thought I knew who the hero was at the time. There really isn't any hero in it, but the guy that I thought was going to be the main guy is one of the first to get killed off, and it was just that shocked me too, to the point where I don't know what this is too like intense. I don't know if I should be watching this, but I watched it, and they all die. Alan gets his how do you want to say it? Concomitance? Like in every like EC comic horror book, the bad people, you know, get their desserts. They deserve what they get, and he gets it big time. And after that, the ending of the movie, there's the scene where you see the dead walking on this. What do you call it? God, this is really bad. dock. Because Alan and the actors came on, like, of course, if you're going to an island, you're coming on a ship. I forgot, I left that out. The dead are walking on the dock, and they get onto the ship, and they start moving on the ship. The ship starts moving, and you can see the Miami lights in the background, and you know that's where they're going. And it just ends. That's the end of it. It's creepy. You know what's happening. They're going to Miami, and they're going to raise some hell. So, yeah, this movie is so freaking awesome. It's a great movie to watch during Halloween. It's like I said, stars Alan Ormsby, Valerie Mantzsch, Jeff Gillen, who is actually another Bob Clark actor. He played the Santa Claus in A Christmas Story, the one where Ralphie like sits on his lap and he says, "How about a football? Football? What's a football?" You know, Paul Cronin, Jane Daly, Roy Engelman, Robert Phillip, Bruce Solomon, Al Baird, and Seth Sklary plays Orville Dunsworth, the main corpse. So it's awesome. They were going to remake this movie, but Bob Clark, he was killed in a car accident back in, I think it was 2007. So that idea got scrapped. Alan Ormsby and Anya Ormsby, they were married at the time of the making of this film, and the tombstones in the film were made out of styrofoam. But they did it so well with the graveyard. I mean, the fog machine and just the way everything was set up. It's so good. I really recommend you watching this on Halloween if you get a chance, or any time at night. It's really good. So if we can get a radio clip from that movie, let's see if Javi can get it. So let's listen.
Children had a party.
It's party time.
It was Orville's coming out party. Oh, they had so much fun. They laughed and laughed and laughed. That is, until Orville's friends dropped in. Children shouldn't play with dead things.
Oh, and we're back. Hey, I hope you love listening to the Monster Cave podcast. If you do, you know, let people know about it. I really have a great time doing this. Really going to miss Colin. Colin and I we really went back and forth. We had our disagreements, which is, you know, that's the fun of it too. You know, I know there's a lot of movies that he liked, which I didn't. I know I liked a lot of movies that he didn't. He thought they were terrible. The Intruder Within. if you're listening to this, Colin, I know you didn't like that movie. So the next movie that's playing in my cave tonight is the 1988 horror classic, Primal Rage, directed by Vittorio Rimbaldi. So the story with this is a scientist at a Florida university inadvertently creates a rage virus while performing experiments intended to restore dead brain tissue in baboons. When a journalist for the college paper breaks into the campus lab, he's bitten by one of the infected baboons and the virus spreads to a trio of rapists and a valley girl, all of whom go on a killing spree. So this movie stars Patrick Lowe, who I believe is a brother of Rob Lowe. And he plays Sam Nash. He plays like he's on the college paper. So he's, you know, investigating this story of how Bo Svenson, who plays Etheridge, he's the scientist who's working on these baboons to create this or restore brain cell tissue. And the Cheryl, how do you pronounce her name? Anat plays Lauren Daly. She's just a college student who befriends Sam Nash, which, you know, kind of turns into a relationship. And then you have Sarah Buxton, who is smoking hot in this movie. She plays Debbie. She plays a college student that actually is a little, you know, comes into the story a little late. She had some issues, but she makes up, you know, with classes because she's really intelligent. And then you have Mitch Watson, who plays Frank Duffy. Frank Duffy is the journalist who works with Sam on the paper, who breaks into the lab and is bitten by the baboon. And after that, he starts, you know, feeling these pains, and he goes out on a double date with Sam and Lauren and Debbie, and he accidentally gets into the mood while he's making out with Debbie, and he bites her on the neck. And then the next day, he's at the hospital, and he wigs out. He starts throwing crap. He's hitting people with baseball bats, and he's pretty much he's you know, not Frank anymore. He's not Duffy. He's now this rage monster. So, and then you have these three guys, college guys, that, you know, take women up to their rooms and they find Debbie, who is now, like, infected, and she's sick, and they come across her at night, and they bring her up to their bedroom, and they're gonna rape her, but she turns into a rage monster and bites them. So the virus is continually being, it's going through people. It's you know, 1 + 1 = 2, 2 + 2 = 4. I hope I'm doing my math right. So I suck at math. But yeah, then all of a sudden, you know, you got the three guys, you got Debbie, you got Duffy. They're all infected. And then there's this Halloween party, which is awesome because, okay, this is 1988. You get to see a lot of costumes from back in the day that I remember because I grew up in the 80s. And I remember a lot of the costumes that they wore. So it's kind of very nostalgic to, you know, see these costumes. But the scene is awesome. You have this band that's playing. I can't remember the name of the band, but the song that they play they continue to use this song throughout the movie. They use it at the beginning of the movie. They use it at the Halloween party in the gym of the college. And it's just, the song just goes on and on and on and on. I mean, every time there's a scene that's happening outside and it goes back, they're still playing this. That song cannot be that long. So kind of change it up a bit, you know. But, the three guys, they proceed to kill people in the gym. But, and then Debbie, she still has some, her brain is still, she knows what's going on because she saves her friend, Lauren. They're both roommates. She saves her from one of the guys, but they proceed to kill Debbie. So at the end of the movie, a lot of people are dead. You know, some people are hurt, but you know, they're not. It's not like they're going to die or anything. But there's one thing that happened with Etheridge, though. Is Etheridge? He was going to perform this deal on Debbie, and she wakes up and she proceeds to stab him in the eye with a syringe. Well, now Etheridge, at the end of the movie, Etheridge is a rage monster, and he attacks Lauren in her apartment, and Sam Nash comes to the rescue and knocks him off the balcony, and he dies. And then you see Sam and Lauren getting in their car and taking off, and I'm guessing this is probably the timeline here in this movie. When you first watch it, it's almost like it's the same day, so you kind of have to watch where it's dark out, and then okay, so it's, you know, you have Halloween at the gym, but then you have to like kind of go backwards and figure out, okay, this happened here, this happened here. That's how I am. I don't know if it's OCD or what, but I just need to know what day this is taking place on. So I'm thinking that the day that they leave, and I'm rambling right now, is probably a couple days after, but I consider it, oh, it's November 1st. Blah. Yep, here we go with the holidays. After Halloween, it all kind of goes downhill from there. Anyway, one of the trivia things I want to tell you was directed by Vittorio Rambaldi in his first directing debut, and he is the son of Italian special effects artist Carlo Rambaldi. Now, Carlo Rambaldi, he did the effects for King Kong from 1977. It was 76. He also did the effects for E.T., and he did Dune as well. He did the mechanical effects for Dune. But, Carlo Rambaldi, he did Silver Bullet. That's right, he did Silver Bullet. So he did, he was one of those special effects artists in the 80s, like, you know, Rick Baker and Rob Bottin and, all those special effects guys that actually did the work and didn't just slip through the cracks and, like, do CGI. These guys were the monster makers. They created some of the best special effects ever, I believe. If Primal Rage, it's cheesy. sometimes the continuity might be a little off, but I think it's a great movie. So with that, let's do a radio clip for Primal Rage. So let's listen.
You're witnessing the most significant breakthrough in modern medical history.
What happened to Duffy?
I don't know.
Don't trick me around, Etheridge. He caught something from your monkey.
It's not a disease. The monkey had an abnormal reaction to a synthetic protein that I'm developing. I need your help to find your friend before it's too late.
Debbie yet. I'm worried about her. She's got this infected bite on her neck and she won't go to the doctor.
How did she get it?
From Duffy.
Let's go. Hey! Want to go to a party? Come on, we'll show you a good time.
Let me alone, I'm sick.
Come on, we'll stick you with something that'll fix you right up.
And we're back. Yeah, so I hope you're having a great time, because I sure am. This is awesome. Halloween. Yes. Oh, before I forget, I'm dressing up for Halloween this year. I always dress up for Halloween pretty much, but this costume is pretty cool. It's a Plague Doctor costume that I bought from Amazon. It's really cool. I think it's one of those one-size-fits-all, so I get kind of hesitant, but I decided to go and buy it anyway, so because... If it's a little long and a little big, I can make some adjustments to it. But when I tried it on, it's perfect. It really works out great. And I went to Spirit Halloween. For all your Halloween accessories and costumes, go to Spirit Halloween. They always have a lot of cool stuff, and they have the animatronics, you know, when you walk in, which is always cool. And you can get all sorts of other stuff as well. And they have a lot of Hocus Pocus stuff and, Was it Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, Chucky? They have a lot of stuff. So yeah, check them out. They're cool. But I went off to Amazon, and I went to Spirit Halloween to get some accessories. I got the lantern, and I always get a cane every year. I have a wolf cane. I have a witch doctor cane. I have this devil cane. It's actually more like a Bahamut. The goat, whatever. And then I got this cane. It's a gold cane. It's a gold top. So it's pretty straightforward. But it works out great with my costume. So I went and bought it. So now I have four canes, which is awesome. I'm always looking out for the Wolfman cane. That would be awesome. I'd love to get that. Very expensive, though, when I go out and look for it on like Amazon or eBay. Too pricey for me. It'd be cool, but I just don't have the money for it. But speaking of which, I love how that kind of came into play there with the Wolfman cane, because my the last movie that I'm going to be playing in my cave tonight is the 1941 Universal classic, The Wolfman, directed by George Wagner. Yes, it starts out with even a man who is pure at heart and says his prayers by night may become a wolf when the wolfbane blooms and the moon is full and bright. Yes, that you hear it, that poem is so popular that anyone who thinks of the Wolfman, I'm sure they think about that poem right off the bat, because it's so cool. And I just want to tell you something before I start going into the movie. Is years ago when I was, in my teens, my parents had this book called Amazing Stories, Amazing Facts. I think that was the name of the book. And, you know, if they had any books on history or, you know, anything like that, I always kind of, look at where the mysterious creatures chapters are, because that's the stuff I'd read. Because you know me. And in that book, the beginning of the chapter in the book, it starts out with that poem. And after that, the guy who wrote the book throws in there, so goes the ancient gypsy legend of the werewolf. Well, it's not ancient. It was the guy who wrote it was Kurt Siodmak, who wrote The Wolfman, which was originally going to be called Destiny. Now, Kurt Siodmak was a German Jew who brought in a lot of his history with the Nazis. How the Nazis branded Jewish people with the Star of David. So, but he took that, and instead he used the pentagram. So whenever someone who was a werewolf in human form came across someone who had the star of the pentagram on their palm, those were the next people to die. So I kind of went off there. Where was I going with on this? Anyway, we'll just get to the plot of the movie. So it stars Lon Chaney Jr. as Larry Talbot. And I'm sure everyone knows this movie. I mean, it's a classic. Larry Talbot is going to his home in Wales because his brother John has died, and I think Larry Talbot's going to take over from Sir John Talbot, who was played by Claude Rains, and Larry Talbot comes home, and he accidentally sees Gwen Cutliffe in her father's store because Larry Talbot's working on this telescope. So Larry goes into town. He goes to the store and he meets Gwen, and he's looking through some canes, just kind of pass the time because he really wants to talk to Gwen. And he finds this cane that's got the wolf head with the pentagram with the wolf in it. There's it's a wolf head, and then you have this pentagram with a wolf. A wolf, four-legged wolf on it. And he buys it, and he takes Gwen out to this gypsy camp with another friend whose name is, she's not in there. Jenny Williams. Well, Bela Lugosi is at this, he plays Bella, the Roman fortune teller, who is also the werewolf. And he sees the pentagram in Jenny Williams' palm, and he tells her to leave. And she, runs off, and he turns into a wolf, but he turns into a four-legged wolf. And he attacks Jenny, and Larry runs to save her, but she's dead. But he gets bit by the werewolf and kills Bela with the wolf cane, which is made of silver. So he's now bit. And he's got the pentagram on his his wound. And he, lo and behold, he later on the they never really go into the full moon part of this movie. There is no full moon. It's just at night he turns into a werewolf. It's never, I don't think, confirmed that the full moon does it until Frankenstein meets the Wolfman. So, Larry Talbot is, now he goes and attacks, and kills a cemetery caretaker, and the cops are on, looking around trying to find out who's doing these killings. They're still investigating Larry Talbot, though, because Larry Talbot believes he killed a wolf, but when they would inspect Jenny Williams' body, they find Bela, who is now in human form. So now they're kind of questioning him, and he's, I know I killed a wolf, and, He's kind of losing it because he doesn't know what's reality or what's not or what's fake, or, you know, he's not sure anymore. And this whole time, I mean, when you kind of watch this movie too, no one really sees him as a werewolf. A lot of people, you know, there's a doctor in this movie that says that, you know, anything can happen in a man's mind. So even though we see him turn into a werewolf, Larry Talbot turns into a werewolf, we don't. We kind of have to look and say, well, maybe he's not, you know, maybe he's just insane now. Because Maliva the Gypsy, who's played by Maria Ospenskaya, is, you know, telling him that he was bitten, he's a werewolf. Well, you know, everything that she's feeding into his mind, maybe... You know, he's now thinking that he is a werewolf when is maybe he never was. Maybe, you know, he's just mad. Maybe he's got a split personality now. But he goes, towards the end of the movie, he goes off and he attacks Gwen. But Sir John, who has the silver-headed cane, the wolf cane, comes after him and kills him, thinking, you know, that it's the wolf. Well, Sir John actually, you know, sees him transform back into Larry while, you know, Maliva the Gypsy is kneeling next to Larry Talbot. So Sir John now thinks that he killed his son, Larry, and the villagers and, you know, the doctor and the constable show up. And they all think that Larry came to Gwen's rescue and, you know, to, you know, fight off the wolf that's killing people. So it's a very sad ending to Larry Talbot because, you know, no one thought he was the werewolf. They just thought he's coming to rescue Gwen. And that doesn't end there. It goes into the next movie, Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, which I won't get into because I will be talking about that movie in the future.
Something?
Animal tracks.
Whoever is bitten by a werewolf and lives becomes a werewolf himself.
Oh, don't hand me that. You're just wasting your time.
The wolf bit you, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he did. You wouldn't want to run away with a murderer, would you?
Oh, Larry, you're not. You know you're not.
I killed Bela. I killed Richardson. If I stay here any longer, you can't tell who'll be next.
There's pictures of him and his German Shepherd hanging on the set. So he apparently really loved that dog. Although silver bullets were mentioned several times throughout the film, only the silver-headed cane is actually used to dispatch the werewolves. Silver bullets won't be used until House of Frankenstein. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I don't know if they ever mentioned it in Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, when you watch these movies with the knowledge that you know now, you kind of just assume that these things are in the movie, but when you kind of put yourself in the mindset of watching this movie or trying to watch it for the first time, you know, kind of placing yourself, you're back in 1941 and you're finally seeing this for the first time, you have to look at things and go, oh, yeah, see, they never brought that up. There is no full moon in this movie, which you know, it's common knowledge now that full moons, turn men into werewolves. So it's very interesting how that all comes together. You know, like I said, Frankenstein meets Wolfman is the first time where they use a full moon. And of course, House of Frankenstein is the first time they use silver bullets, or that the legend comes into play. So yeah, it's a great movie. I actually really liked the remake from 2010. Benicio del Toro played the character of Larry Talbot, and Sir Anthony Hopkins played Sir John. I like that movie. It's really cool. I have both versions. The unrated is really really cool because there, you know, you have the introduction of the Wolf Kane. And there's some other scenes too that they cut out for the theatrical. But I like watching the unrated because there's so much more story to it. So it's really cool. So, let's do a radio clip for the Wolfman. So let's listen.
Jenny Williams was killed?
Yes. Find something?
Animal tracks.
Whoever is bitten by a werewolf and lives becomes a werewolf himself.
Oh, don't hand me that. You're just wasting your time.
The wolf bit you, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he did. You wouldn't want to run away with a murderer, would you?
Oh, Larry, you're not. You know you're not.
I killed Bela. I killed Richardson. If I stay here any longer, you can't tell who'll be next.
All right, we're back. Hey, it's, we're kind of coming towards the end of the show. I kind of figured it was going to be kind of short just because, it's just me talking. Halloween's coming up. Can't wait. That's going to be good. Any other movies that I've been watching? I don't know of any new movies out right now that I'm looking at watching. I know there's a Fall of the House of Usher TV show that's out there. It does 10 episodes. That looks interesting. I haven't watched it yet. Creepshow is back. The fourth season of Creepshow is back. I watched the first episode. Wasn't excited about it. Wasn't thrilled about it. Hopefully they get better this season. The first season's really good, though. I kind of like it when they go back. I kind of like the original stuff. I like the original Creepshow, the movie. That was really good. I kind of hope they kind of, you know, there is, it looks like there's one episode that really want to watch on this this season. So I just hope it gets better. But, you know, if you haven't watched any of the Creepshow episodes, they're on AMC. Check them out. You know, there's some good ones. Not so good ones. Looking at Halloween stuff, getting some more collectibles. I should have brought my book in, but I didn't, of collectibles. But I have, you know, like four books that have collectible stuff in them that I'm always on the outlook, look for. One good place to go is Half Price Books. They got some good stuff going on there. The last time I was there, though, I think some people are they're on a strike or something. They need more pay. So hey, you guys that work that own Half Price Books, pay these guys. Come on, you know you got a great thing going. I hope that the Half Price Books still continues. I know of two locations right now. I know there was one in Crystal that got closed down years ago, but I know there's one in St. Louis Park, and there's one in Coon Rapids. And those are great places to go, especially when looking for collectibles or books or you know, movies. You know, they always have something cool there. Video games. They have a lot of comic books that from the old, like, early 50s that, like the EC Comics, but these are like Witch's Tales and Journey into Fear. Those are really cool. I have a lot of those. They have some great stories, and these are pre-code comics, which means that they got away with a lot of stuff until the code administration came in there and, nope, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. So it's fun to read those comics from back in the day. Some stuff, it's like, you know, you read it and you don't think anything of it, really. I'm just looking more for the twist in the story, but, you know, when you probably read it and you probably put yourself in that mindset, you're thinking, whoa, man, they got away with that stuff. See, I love a lot of pre-code stuff, especially like in the movies, you know, from the 30s, from like, you know, 1930 to 1934. Because I think 1934 is when the code administration came in there. You can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. And you watch a lot of these movies from like the early 30s and go, whoa. Yeah, you probably, you know, there's a movie called Dr. X where the lead reporter walks into a brothel. After that, you know, after 1934, they would never do that again. They would never do that until later on. So it's kind of fun to, you know, watch that stuff. But anyway, after with that, I guess it's gonna be time to close the show. I'm gonna have to go and you know, watch some of my movies in the cave tonight. Anyway, I just want to thank you if you're listening to this podcast. Thank you so much. I love doing this. I love talking about it. And if you love like listening to it as well, you know, I really appreciate it. I'm so humble. Because this is, I really want to just, you know, like tell this stuff to people that like to listen to this stuff. And sometimes I might not get it right. I might get it wrong. If I do, and you're listening to this, you're going, nope, John, that's wrong. It was 1935. You know, that's cool. I love that. But anyway, it's that time to close out the Monster Cave. But I hope everyone has a happy Halloween, and I hope everyone's safe and has a good time. I hope we have some good weather. You know, the weather this year has been really cool. It's so far so good. So with that, I hope you have yourself a good evening and good night, whatever you are.